Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. This is Weekly Comics Spotlight 303 for comics originally released on May 29th, 2013. Now, starting us off in DC is Earth 2 Annual Number 1. This is introducing the new Batman of Earth 2, among other things. What did you think of this one, Drew?
I expected a little more Batman, to be honest.
I think that's a very fair comment. I felt the same way. I expected a lot more Batman.
In fact, I kind of had stopped reading a lot of Earth 2, but I thought, well, you know, if it's a Batman story, I'll see what's going on, and then maybe I'll get back into Earth 2 again. And they had a chance with me, you know? They had a chance to give me a compelling Earth 2 Batman and rope me and bring me in, but it was pretty light on the Batman stuff.
We only got, it felt like, what, a handful of pages, if that?
Yeah, I would say maybe half a dozen pages.
We got the two-page splash, four pages, five, six, I guess six later, and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
Any guesses on who this guy might be?
No. How about you?
There was something about his entrance that had me thinking Mr. Terrific. Possibly the Michael Holt, probably the Terry Sloan, with the very, very high likelihood I'm completely off base because I got nothing to back this up with.
Okay.
And I think what got me thinking along those lines was the explosive projectiles he was shooting when he first came out reminded me of the T-Spheres. Obviously, they're not that. But, I don't know, we got so little to go on here. And I was expecting a lot more.
Yeah. And you know, James Robinson is a really good writer. And I expected a lot. I had a higher bar for this issue, and so it was a little disappointing. I was just disappointed. I guess that's the best way to say it. I was just disappointed.
I felt the same way, but for me, I liked the issue and I thought what we got was good, but I too was disappointed because I was partially expecting different things and, again, more of Batman.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that struck me with this, and I'm curious what your thoughts are, we get a lot of the Atom. We get a bit with, Captain Steel. I was expecting it to be Commander Steel, because that's what it was back in the day. A little with a couple of the other characters, Mr. Miracle, Big Barda, and stuff. But overall, the issue felt unfocused.
Yes, I kind of felt that way, too, that it just kind of popped around, and little story beats here and there, but nothing real cohesive and anything to bring you in, you know?
It felt like it was teasing a number of things and not really developing fully any of them.
And for me, an annual, maybe my expectations are wrong, but an annual, you should be able to pick up an annual having not even read the series. It should be a standalone story, should it not?
Well,
it should be a nice, solid, standalone story.
That's an excellent question, because some of the other annuals I was reading this week, like the Catwoman one, that was starting a story arc in that title. You know, and I remember back in the day when New Teen Titans, the Judas Contract, ended in the annual. And I think there's a couple of schools of thought here, and I don't think any are necessarily more right than others. One is you've got the extra space, so, you know, grand explosive finale to a story. Okay, that has some merit. But I also completely agree with you that since this is taking place outside the normal numbering scheme, it gives you a bit more of a done-in-one potential that fleshes out what's going on in the main title and stuff, but is also, like you said, completely accessible to new readers.
I guess I'm thinking the Batman and Robin annual that was out a few months ago.
Mm-hmm.
The story with it was like a scavenger hunt storyline with Damian, you know, showing glimpses of Bruce Wayne's past and things, and it was very heartwarming, very touching, but it was completely self-contained with a little bit of kind of continuity stuff that you had to deal with. But for the most part, it was, you could have just picked that up having never read a Batman and Robin and enjoyed it.
Yeah, I thought it was a great issue.
So that's my expectations for New 52 annuals. You know, that's what I want from them.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's tough when they're not like that.
I certainly can't fault you with that. I completely agree in so much as this is a chance for them to really hook readers and show what they could do if they just had more space within an issue. Here they had the more space, but it almost felt like they were taking subplots or something that could have been scattered throughout half a dozen issues and just putting them all in one spot.
Yeah, it was almost like I've got to fill an annual, you know, and he wasn't ready.
Yeah.
You know, and what else can I jam in here to get this page count up?
Well, and some of the things introduced here were such teaser level introductions almost. Like this Henry guy, or Andre, I guess, either way.
Yeah.
Who's trying to atone for his father's sins or whatever, is clearly meant to be somebody. Now, my guess is Brainwave Jr. from Infinity Inc. is kind of who this guy is supposed to, or the equivalent of, I guess. But I've got nothing to support that other than his name, atoning for his father, and the fact he has persistent headaches, or used to.
Yeah, okay.
But that's something where I'm able to read a lot more into this, perhaps way too much more into this than I should be, based on what's actually on the page. So for me, it goes towards just a lack of a follow-through almost on some of this.
Yeah, and especially, you know, if you flip to the front cover and it's $5, it's $4.99 for this.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a significant investment, you know, for a story. And you you want something for that, and I just don't think it's there. I mean, it's a decent story, and if this was a $2.99 book, I wouldn't be as disappointed.
I guess for me, I mean, I completely agree with everything you said, and I think you sum it up right. The return on the investment for most readers simply isn't going to be there. For people thinking they can sample the title this way, it's totally not going to be there. I think there are going to be a lot of people disappointed with this issue. I certainly fell into that camp. I would say just from a quality perspective, I think it was well done for what it set out to do. I just think what it set out to do was ill-conceived.
Yeah.
So on the one hand, I want to give it that, you know, a 4 out of 5 and stuff, but on the other hand, I really can't, just because I think it was a bit of a misfire in some respects. So I'm going to kind of split the difference, because I don't want to give it a 2 either, because I think it was better than that. But I'm going to go with a 3 and say it's really just kind of a mixed bag there.
I started with a 3, but when I factor in the price point and then my expectations, be it whether they're misguided or not, my expectations for what an annual should be, I'm going to have to go to a high 2.
I can see that. And I think there are going to be, like I said, a lot of people disappointed with this issue, and I think that's really unfortunate. So hopefully they will do better. Again, some of the other annuals, particularly the ones that came out this week, Catwoman was finishing or starting off a new story arc. Which other annuals did we get? We got Red Hood and the Outlaws.
Yeah.
That started a new arc. Gave some good background between Roy and Green Arrow. And then there was the Batman the Dark Knight annual. That was completely done in one, self-contained, and set at Halloween. So it felt really odd to release it now.
Hmm.
But that was one that also done in one, but in a it felt like a filler issue.
That had Mad Hatter, Penguin, and Scarecrow.
Yeah, that was the one. It frustrates me when they've got the opportunity with the increased page count to really do some bigger stuff, and not all the titles are getting that chance with the annuals. And then when I see them kind of do a swing and a miss, or just a flat-out, you know, foul ball in some cases, it seems like a really missed opportunity, and particularly like you pointed out with that price point of $4.99 and stuff, so just shy of that $5 mark. I think it underscores and highlights the current cost of comics, and sometimes the lack of return on that payment.
It's $4.99, and you're not getting you're not even getting the digital code, like the combo pack you normally would get for that price.
Yeah, yeah. Shall we move on to our Marvel book?
Yeah, let's do that.
This is X-Men number 1, or the latest X-Men number 1. I think it's X-Men number 1, number 15, maybe. I've lost count of how many titles they've done. This one's by Brian Wood and Olivier Coipel. There were one or two things I'm going to nitpick this one on.
Okay.
We get the opening sequence, which kind of, you know, sets the scene and whatnot, which I like. Then we get the second scene. 3 panels in, we get a 3 weeks later caption. So I'm like following this, we get Jubilee and stuff like that, and suddenly we're 3 weeks later, what happened? She's still in the same airport. it's a nitpick, it was just poorly placed, they could have done better, not a big deal, but it shows a little bit of a lack of, I'm going to blame the editor, because I think Brian Wood actually did a very good job in this issue. The other thing I'm going to nitpick is on Jubilee herself. Last I looked, she was still a vampire. No mention of that anywhere. But, you know, hey, other than that, for something that very easily could have been, and I think was dismissed by a lot of people as a gimmicky take on X-Men with nothing but female characters and stuff, I thought this was a good issue.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty good. And I'm not really a mutant guy, so I don't read a lot of X-books, and historically I never have. So I dip in and out occasionally. And so this was a first issue for me in a lot of ways, and I enjoyed the story. I wanted to know what was happening. I wanted to know who these characters were. The antagonist, he was interesting, and then the kind of main characters. I didn't find it hokey or contrived. The all women, it seemed natural.
Yeah,
it didn't seem forced to me at all. And it could have, you know, leading up to it, that was kind of the chatter. This was just a forced gimmick, and I didn't feel that way at all when I was reading it. The art was really solid, didn't distract or anything. It was well done. All in all, I thought it was a really good issue, and for me, even, it gets bonus points because I don't have the history with these characters that most folks do. Most people know X-Men inside and out, so they would have some buy-in already. I don't have that history, so they won me over quickly, which is great for a number one issue, I think.
Oh yeah,
and I was interested in all the all the little storylines that were going on, all the characters, and I'm anxious to see the next issue. So that's what a number one's all about in my mind. So I definitely give it a strong 4.
I can totally see that and agree with that, because I think Brian Wood here did a great job telling a solid first issue, setting stuff up, introducing the characters, making us care about the characters and stuff, advancing the story. There was some setup, but there was also, I felt, some payoff, and it moved forward. It wasn't just, and here's the beginning of a story, or we're going to assemble the team, or whatever. We hit a little bit kind of in the middle of things, because obviously the Jean Grey School has been around for a while and all that, but it's given to us in an accessible manner. So, high marks on doing a good first issue. High marks on doing an accessible X-Men issue of any variation. Because that's tough to do sometimes. And it was just generally a really good comic. You know, there are things that are kind of tossed out here that we don't get payoff on. I mean, I'm kind of curious what's going on with Bling and Mercury and stuff. And I'm sure that will be in future issues. But there have been times where it seems like the selection of X-Men members of a team or whatever is just, well, we needed a couple of cool people, someone who could fly, a psychic, and one or two other, you know, kind of fill-in-the-numbers type deal.
And you gotta have Wolverine, so put him in there. And
exactly. I'm surprised we didn't have X-23, actually. Could have had Wolverine and still be female.
I think that question's been asked a lot, so I'm sure it's coming.
Oh, yeah. But the fact that this felt so natural and not like, okay, how are we gonna, you know, artificially cram these couple of characters into this team to make this work? That was surprisingly well done, and something that I think other X titles have really fallen flat on a couple of times.
You know? Yeah, I'm definitely on board. I mean, I just felt it was just compelling writing and nice art, and intriguing and interesting. And I mean, I like to be interested in what I'm reading, and this went a long way.
Mm-hmm. I liked how it was, again, just an accessible X-Men book. Because, I mean, I've read them all, and I have since, you know, like Secret Wars and, you know, a little before that even. But there comes a point where there are so many of these mutants. They've changed names, identities, powers, looks, etc. so many times. They've changed the lineup of the titles so many times, and who's friends with who's fighting who, whatever, that there comes a point where the X-Men books can, in the hands of a, I don't want to say a lesser writer, but at times the books can be impenetrable and the fact that this was just so easy to get into, sailed along so nicely, and didn't feel like I was like it was decompressed and I just flew through it and there was nothing there. There was stuff here. This is how I think X-Men issues ought to be. This is how I think first issues ought to be. And I think some of their other books just get kind of lost in almost the soap opera aspect of it, if you will, or the mutant gang warfare. And it didn't fall into those traps. So I was pleased. I want to see where he's going to go with this.
Yeah, I hear you. I'm right there with you. And man, he's got a lot of stuff. He's very Bendis-like. He seems to have a lot of books going on simultaneously, and they're all pretty strong and high quality.
This is a title that may not top the charts as extraordinarily as some of the other X launches have, but I'm also going to bet it's not going to have the radical drop over time that some of those other titles also have. This has a couple of alternate covers and stuff, so it'll have a bit of a drop on that second issue. But he's got the goods here. I think if people try this out and they're open to reading X-Men stuff, and not everyone is, but if they're coming at it with an open mind and stuff, I think they will, odds are, like what they see and come back for more.
Yeah.
And really, that's sign of success. Shall we move on to our other book of the week?
I think so. Yeah, let's do that.
This is Thief of Thieves number 14. This is co-written by, Robert Kirkman and Andy Diggle is coming on board. Actually, the story is by Kirkman and Diggle, and Diggle is coming on as the actual writer, I guess, doing the script and stuff. What were your thoughts on this one?
I thought it was good. This guy's kid, man. I mean, he's just a
loser?
Nothing but trouble. Yeah, loser.
Nothing but trouble.
Nothing but trouble. I mean, I hope my child doesn't grow up like this. I'm going to do everything I can to make sure that I don't end up with a kid like this, because it's very reminiscent of that old sketch about the mafia. You know, every time I think I'm out, they pull me back in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he just can't get out. He can't stay out of trouble, and his dad is always he's the worst for it. And
he's lucky his dad is a thief and not an assassin. I think if his father was an assassin, he would just have been shot long ago.
Really great bad guys, though. I mean, they're evil. it's easy to root to know who to root for and who to root against.
Mm-hmm.
It's really good visuals. Really, I think the story is good, and it's an interesting beginning to a new story.
I've got a little bit of a love-hate relationship with some of Kirkman's titles, and this is certainly one of them, because at times I think they can be brilliant, at other times I think they aren't. This is one where this issue is setting up the new story arc, and frankly, it just seems like a continuation of where the title's just been going since day one. This doesn't seem to have the clear, definitive arcs like most, you know, mainstream Marvel DC books do. This is falling more in kind of the Walking Dead frame of mind, where it just keeps going. That's good. Makes it consistent with the previous issues. I like that. On the downside, we just changed writers, and so far, I don't know, with this issue, Andy Diggle really brought anything major to the title?
No, I think he's just not letting it fall off the rails. You know, he's just keeping it going in the same direction. It seems very, very similar in vein to what was happening before.
And that, too, is good, because while I want him to bring something new to the table, if I had read this and felt it was a 180 or something, I'd probably be saying, oh, wow, it's totally changed. You know what I mean? It's a little bit of a no-win almost for them.
Yeah, if it would have been too crazy, you could have said, okay, this time for me to get off. I'm done.
Yeah. But, I mean, what I love a good heist film, and this is kind of the closest I found in comic format, but this isn't really about a heist. This is more of a soap opera, father and his messed up son.
Well, the big, what is it, the Italy job that's coming up? You know, that's going to be the big heist, right?
Haven't they been kind of teasing that since the first issue?
Yeah, they'll never get there. It'll just always be the Italy job. They'll always be talking about the Italy job and never actually get there.
They've been planning it for 3 years. What's another 30? I mean, it almost feels like there's a long con going on against us, the readers.
That's, you know, that's possible. And I would not put it past Kirkman for doing something like that.
He's skilled at doing it, and it's entertaining, so that's cool. There were a couple of things about this issue that kind of cut down on the accessibility of it. You were talking about the great bad guys and stuff, and I pretty much agree. We got this guy at the beginning, the one in the red shirt and the suit and stuff. What's his name?
Johnny Bad Guy.
I couldn't find it in this issue, and I went looking.
Yeah.
Is it a critical flaw? No, because he's, like you said, very memorable, very iconic, he's the bad guy, and that's really all you need to know. But this title has a few places where it shifts scenes and time frames a little unclearly, or less clearly than it could have been, I guess would be the way to put it. It's not badly done, but there are a few places where I think either with a better editor or maybe a little bit more input from Kirkman or something, or maybe the writers feeling they've got a little more freedom than maybe they feel they're getting from Kirkman, although I've got no reason to think Kirkman isn't giving them the freedom they need, that this could be just a level higher than it is.
Yeah, I have a feeling that Kirkman meets with his co-writer, and they put together a bullet points for like the next 7 issues or 6 issues, whatever gets them to the next trade, and they have about a sentence or two for each story, and he goes, "All right, buddy, don't screw this up," and he walks out the door, and then comes back in 6 issues. That's my guess of what's going on in The Thief of Thieves.
Wouldn't surprise me at all, and I could see where the writer would be thinking that there are certain expectations. Oh, I better not mess it up. Oh, I better, you know, kind of follow what we agreed on, and may feel a little hamstrung, whereas from Kirkman's perspective, he's like, hey, cut loose, have fun, do a good job, and not feeling like he's hamstrung them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There are a couple of places here, though, where we're cutting more into the, well, what's the backstory of the son and his relationship with dad? You know, the ex-wife won't meet with him, so he's got to do a con job to get her to talk to him and stuff like that. And just almost, again, soap opera aspects of this, and when I'm coming to it wanting more of a heist, more of a, a bank robbery kind of a storyline going in some way, shape, or form, and not getting that, it leaves me wanting a little bit.
Yeah, Conrad's clearly still in love with his ex-wife. He's tortured over the marriage falling apart. His fault, I'm sure he blames himself. He's tortured over what his son has become, and I'm sure he blames himself for the lack of parenting that he's provided. And that is compelling in itself. I like that part of the story, and I want that redemption for him. I want him to get that redemption. So as long as that is maintained and you weave in a really cool Ocean's 11 heist every 6 issues or so, I'll probably sticking around.
I'm going to stick around because I'm curious where they're going and if we're going to get those heists, or if it's going to be like at the end of this, a 6-page sequence where he and his wife are basically talking, and she's like, you know, he's trying to talk her into something and stuff. It's like, it wasn't a bad scene. I don't know that it was a 6-page scene. And one of the things that I found entertaining is if you go to, because it starts there at the staple, if you go to the bottom panel on the right-hand page, he's clearly across the street from the San Diego Convention Center.
Okay. Oh, nice nod there.
You know, which is cool, nice little Easter egg or whatever.
Yeah, okay.
And again, what I'm reading here isn't bad, but I would like to see this moving a little bit faster maybe, and I keep coming at it wanting more of the Ocean's 11 kind of stuff, or the Mission Impossible kind of stuff, and getting more nighttime soap opera stuff.
Yeah, and I think it does. It goes up and down with the amount of soap opera stuff in each issue. Sometimes they're just wall to wall action, heist crime stuff, and you're on the edge of your seat. And then sometimes they're a little slower.
Yeah.
You just don't know what you're going to get.
It's just that the first issue we got introduced to like a dozen or so of the Ocean's 11 crew, if you will.
Yeah.
And barely seen some of them since. Or at least it feels that way. That's probably, you know, because that may be a harsh statement. I read these as they come out every month, so I forget things.
It does feel like there was a lot more potential for that team,
mm-hmm.
and it kind of dwindled a few issues in, and he didn't need them anymore.
So I'm curious what the long-term game plan is for this, how it's going to go. again, I'm liking what I'm getting, but I'm wanting something I'm not getting. You know, so it's as much my expectations as anything else.
Yeah, I agree.
So for me, this is a solid 3 out of 5. I think there's a definite audience for it. I think it's doing what it's setting out to do, whether it's what I would like it to do or not. And it's certainly not bad at all. It's one where I think the marketing sets expectations, the title sets certain expectations that it's not meeting, but it's, you know, it's not bad.
I would probably be a low 4. I think it's a solid start to this new story and new team, and I think it was pretty good. And I would say it crested the high 3 into the low 4 for me.
Fair enough. Cool. So last week you had mentioned The Wake number 1 was coming out this week, and you wanted to kind of talk about that a little. What'd you think of it?
Oh yeah, did you pick this up?
I did not.
Okay. It was good. It was very The Massive meets The Abyss meets The Deep Blue Sea, kind of a lot of water going on, you know.
I was going to guess it sounded very wet.
Yes, very wet, you know, putting together this crack team of scientists that can get to the bottom of this strange alien that they found or whatever it is, whatever this mystery might be that this crack team is brought together, and they're all down on their luck, and they all have, you know, a couple of them have history with each other and are very surprised when they see that they're on the same team together. And it's got a lot of, so in that way you're probably thinking it's very cliched, so you could lean that way, but I enjoyed it. It's got 3 different timelines in it. It's, I guess, the main story, which is the most interesting, which is taking place with the team of scientists, mm-hmm. is actually 200 years in the past. The present day, there's a lot of massive style flooding going on the planet from climate change or whatever, and there's people are riding sharks, and it's kind of strange stuff going on. And then there's some flashbacks to years and years in the past that are, like, maybe I can't see the page off the top of my head, but it's like 10,000 years in the past, 100,000 years in the past or something. Oh, there it is. Yeah, 100,000 years ago. So there's 3 different timelines in there, but it's not like Thor God of Thunder where there's 3 really great simultaneous stories being told. It's basically one solid story and then a couple of supporting stories that are I assume as the 10 issues unfold, they'll have more of a part in the overarching story. But I thought it was a solid kickoff to this miniseries, and I would say it's a solid 3.
Cool. Sounds interesting.
Yeah. I enjoyed it.
So what else did you read this week?
We had a conversation a few weeks ago. We were talking about the Phonogram mm-hmm. Miniseries, and so I picked up that Image First number 1 that they reprinted to check that out, and I thought that was really a cool read. So I'm gonna try to read the rest of that miniseries. You know, Image puts out those dollar issues of some of their more either critically acclaimed or high selling titles, and this was one of them in the last batch that I was able to pick up when they reissued this Image First, and it's Phonogram number 1 by Kieran Gillen and Jamie McKelvey.
Yeah,
and very interesting, unique story, and I'm psyched to see where that goes. I know that most of you probably have already read this, but this is new to me, and it was a really cool kickoff issue.
I read that and the second miniseries after it.
Yeah,
and I just, McKelvey's art really clicks with me. I think it's great. I'm not that steeped in music, so most of the musical references they had went just straight past me. But it was still a very good story. And I think it could have been one where if you didn't get the references, you'd have been puzzled, and it wasn't, so I was pleased with that. So definitely, yeah, keep going with that. I think you'll like it.
Good. I read Savage Wolverine 5.
Mm-hmm. I read that, yeah.
Yeah, really great visuals. This is Cho's last issue, I believe.
Yes.
From the letters page, I got the sense that he was done. I didn't look up who the new team is going to be.
I thought it was Madeira on art, but I could be wrong on that.
Okay. This has been fun. I've enjoyed these 5 issues of Savage Wolverine. A bit hokey, but I think the visuals, you know, for me, were just, you know, for one of the visuals, there's Hulk, a ball of fire, an alien, a whale, all in this sequence, and it's an amazing sequence, and it's really, I think the issue's worth the price just for that.
Yeah. Well, what I like is it's got that sense of humor about it without blatantly poking fun at stuff.
Yeah.
In other words, it's not kind of insulting to comic fans or comic readers or the comic material, but it's definitely having some fun with it.
Yeah, that was really good. And we might, down the road, might want to look at the, and see what the direction this series takes with the new creative team, because I've enjoyed these first five issues, and I'm not sure what Frank Cho is doing now, but he could have stuck around for a while. I was happy with him.
Well, and it may be that they flip him back on after the next arc or something.
That's possible. It could be almost like a hiatus since he does the art as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'd certainly like to see him back on the book. I think just the art and the story, I mean, the whole thing was wonderful, so I really enjoyed that.
Did you read Avenging Spider-Man 21?
Yes, I did. Thought it was a little chaotic. Seems to be setting up the superior foes of Spider-Man, is my take.
Okay. Yeah, it's definitely inferior to superior.
yes, I can see that.
I need to trademark that, because, yeah, I just, it's not as good. It's definitely not as good, and it's the weaker Spider-Man title, and thank goodness, I guess you'll have plenty to choose from in the next couple of months with Superior Spider-Month coming. This is going to be Marvel team up, so yeah. Avenging will be no more. So, yeah, I didn't care for that issue very much.
It was all right. Again, it just seemed to, like I said, be a little chaotic and stuff.
Yeah, and I also picked up Wolverine and X-Men 30.
Mm-hmm.
I know we had talked about 29 earlier on, and I wanted to continue because I enjoyed that one so much. This wasn't as accessible for me, this issue.
Okay, I can see that. I can see that.
I had a lot of times I really didn't know what was going on, but there were enough very interesting stories, very interesting characters, and their story that I was okay with it. You know, I was okay with not being 100% on board with exactly what was happening.
Well, I think that's the challenge with X-Men titles is you've got a bazillion characters, which makes it a little hard to make it accessible sometimes, but also something that if you've got enough of the cool ones in any given issue, you can help carry somebody through if they're not really fully grasping all the nuances of the main plot line or something.
Yeah, there were mutants I had never seen or knew anything about, but they seem so interesting. I definitely want more.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, I'm kind of interested in seeing where this goes.
Yeah, and that was the arc that's kind of the prologue to the Hellfire Club that I think officially starts up next issue.
Okay.
So that'll be interesting. I got Star Trek number 21. That marks the start of the stories taking place after Star Trek Into Darkness and the video game that came out. And I thought they did a good job of kind of moving it past those two things, referencing them without spoiling them. Now, I've seen the movie, have no real intention of playing the video game. I just don't have that kind of time to sink into it. But I really like how they're tying the comic into the movie and the game and stuff, all that, tying that all together so well. I think that's a lot of fun. Did you read Justice League of America number 4?
No.
It's either a chief cliffhanger ending or it will have real consequences.
Oh, one of those.
I'm pretty sure I know where I'm going to lean. I am, and by a cheap cliffhanger, I mean completely, you've got to be kidding me if you think anybody on Earth would believe that, given everything else you're soliciting right now. Little disappointed that. We'll see where they're going.
Now, the three issues prior, have you been pleased with the title?
I think the concept behind why this team exists is interesting. I felt this is the lesser of all the Justice League books.
Yeah. Yeah, I read one, and then wasn't compelled to continue.
I mean, I don't hate it or anything, but I don't think it's as good as Vibe, and I think most people would be surprised to hear anyone say that if they're not reading the two books, but Vibe is the superior title. I like that art style better, so part of it's personal preference there, but I think it's telling a cleaner, better story.
And are they both better than Katana?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Katana, the scene changes, it just jumps around.
Yeah.
I am disappointed with some of that. There have been a couple of things that came out this week that really pleasantly surprised me. Have you been reading the Injustice Gods Among Us title?
No, my brother's been on me about that. He really likes it, and when he describes the plots to me, it sounds just awesome. I need to get on that.
I really recommend that. Again, it's a tie-in to a game. I've got no interest in the game. And it's digital first, so it's doing it in shorter increments and then kind of stringing three of them together into an issue. And this last one, they kind of start that third thing, starts a new story arc that goes into the next issue. Presumably, I wouldn't be surprised if for two parts of the three, but anyways. It's essentially the new 52 universe, minus any real constraints on we're going to keep this going forever and ever and ever, so let's push a few characters in a few directions that we can't normally do, and not violate their core, but it's a what if this happened? How would this character react? And the way that they're going with that is a lot of fun. It's a no-holds-barred storytelling approach to the Justice League, essentially.
Yeah, it sounds really, really interesting. And I was under the impression that it would be over, you know that it wouldn't continue. But I guess with all the DLC that the video game has, they have kind of endless possibilities. I guess they can mine that way. And continues to tie back into the video game and goes, is that the plan, you think?
As far as I know, it's not necessarily going to tie back into the game or not. It may, I don't know, because I know they keep releasing new characters and stuff, but I think as long as they can tell a compelling story, which they're doing really well, and keep the quality up, they could go just ad infinitum regardless of how the game does.
Yeah, and it has been, it's a great seller, so.
Well, it's interesting because DC had also done the DC Online Legends or whatever that series was that kind of was interwoven between issues of Justice League Generation Lost, and that was another video game tie-in, in that case, to the MMO, but they told a character arc for Lex Luthor that was surprisingly well done and took the character in a direction that you really can't do in the main DC universe, because there are certain story arcs that require certain other plot elements to happen that you can do in a disposable universe, for lack of a better term, and I feel they've been doing the same thing here with Injustice Gods Among Us. And I'm sure a lot of people have been just dismissing the title out of hand because, oh, it's a video game tie-in. How good could it be?
And
it,
exactly, yeah.
It's a shame. Definitely enjoying that a lot more than I had originally expected, so I'm glad I tried it out.
Yep, that's what I've heard. I've heard it's good stuff.
Got the final issue this week of Dark Avengers number 90. They left the team in a very interesting state. I don't know if we'll ever see them again, but if so, could be fun. And then we got the fifth issue this week of Doctor Who, Prisoners of Time. Have you been following that?
No. I'm way behind on Doctor Who. Like, I'm still on Tom Baker.
Oh, wow. Well, with this series, they're going through 12 issues, and the first one was the first Doctor, the second was the second Doctor, etc.
Okay.
And with this, the fifth issue, as I was reading it, it's like, good, but it kind of feels like the start of a second trade paperback collection, and sure enough, after that, I was looking at previews, and the first collection is going to cover 1 through 4. And this gets to the fifth Doctor. So I'm looking forward to when they get up towards the Doctors I've actually been following on the show.
So they're going all the way back to the original, like, six-episode series, you know, from way, way back?
All the way back to the beginning with Doctor and his granddaughter and stuff, yeah.
That's great.
So in each incarnation's getting their own issue.
That's really interesting.
They've done similar things before. I mean, IDW does a good job with the licensed properties, and with the Doctor Who stuff, a good job of kind of celebrating the history of the character. So I'm very much enjoying that.
And there's just one Doctor Who series at a time. It's not a Green Hornet situation.
There's one ongoing, and then there is this mini series.
Okay.
Or 12-issue series. So.
Okay.
But they are not competing versions, if you will.
Because they don't come out the same week.
Sometimes they have, but they're not competing continuities.
Okay.
This, when presumably we get up to the current Doctor, will somehow not violate what's going on currently with the current Doctor in his own book. Whereas, you know, we've got two very different Green Hornet universes going on concurrently. So, to me, that's a key difference.
Okay.
You read anything else you want to talk about?
No, those were it.
It was pretty much for me. It was It was another big stack this week, but a lot of good stuff.
Yeah, it was a very solid week.
Yeah, I was by and large very pleased. A little disappointed by the DC annuals this time around.
Yeah, I would definitely agree there. I haven't read my Catwoman annual yet, or the Red Hood, but I flipped through them, so I really don't have anything to say yet. But I hope it's better than Earth 2.
Of the two, I liked Red Hood better than Catwoman.
Okay.
Catwoman wasn't bad, but it was kind of setting up the next arc, and yeah, that's fine. It's the kind of thing, if I'd been using the annual to sample the book, it wouldn't have been enough to get me to get the book.
Right.
Its title. Wasn't bad, but not a strong seller on bringing in new readers, in my opinion, at least for me.
It's no Green Team Trillionaires.
Few things are. I think I'm okay with that. So anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
That'll do it for me.
Cool. Join us next week as we discuss Astro City number 1 from DC, Daredevil, End of Days number 8 from Marvel, and Hypernaturals number 12 from Boom Studios. The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.